lot of questions online, Mr. Trump, about the tape that was released on Friday. As you can imagine, you called what you said locker room banter. You described kissing women without consent, grabbing their genitals. That is sexual assault. You bragged that you have sexually assaulted women. Do you understand that?
No, I didn't say that at all. I don't think you understood what was said. This was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it. I apologize to my family. I apologize to the American people. Certainly, I'm not proud of it. But this is locker room talk. You know, when we have a world where you have ISIS chopping off heads, where you have, and frankly, drowning people in steel cages, where you have wars and horrible, horrible sights all over, where you have so many bad things.
Of course, that was from the debate the other night with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And then we also had, oh, by the way, this is Mark Steiner here on the Mark Steiner Show. We had the push by Anderson Cooper saying to him, you describe kissing women without their consent, grabbing their genitals. This is sexual assault. You brag that you have sexually assaulted women. Do you understand that? No, I didn't say that at all. And he goes on, you know, and I think that something is happening here with this, as it has, as it did with President Barack Obama when he was in the height of his first campaign and all during his presidency, which has kind of raised the ugly specter and reality and depth of racism in America. And I think I've been saying this all along, that this campaign by Hillary Clinton was going to do the same thing when it comes to misogyny. And I think that it's a very interesting twist of fate, maybe not altogether unconnected, that a man like Donald Trump is running for president, who is like the grand misogynist. And I think that there's a reason these things come together. And I'm not talking about some hocus-pocus reason. I'm saying that I think there are dynamics socially that happen, why this thing is erupting now and how it's erupting. On top of that, there was a, which we'll share on our webpage, there was an article in this morning's New York Times about a woman who put out a tweet, Kelly Oxford, on social media. She said, women, tweet me your first assaults. They aren't just stats. I'll go first. Old man on city bus grabs my pee and smiles at me. I'm 12. And then next thing she knows, she thought it was just going to be a tweet, and she's been getting 50 responses a minute and being retweeted by the same amount. So this is real, and I think this is something we have to address and talk about. And so I can think of no better person to join me on the air for this as my partner and friend here on the radio, Kalima Young, instructor at Towson University and University of Maryland College Park, who has been helping us with a series on rape culture, and also a co-host here on the Mark Steiner Show. Good to have you in the studio, Kalima, once again.
Thank you very much for having me, Mark.
She brought along with her Pastor Jacob Simpson. Jacob is pastor of the Salem Lutheran Church here in Baltimore. Good to meet you, Jacob. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we also end up welcoming Brittany Oliver, community activist, educator, emerging artist from Baltimore, currently co-director of Hollaback Baltimore, and works at the ACLU of Maryland. And Brittany, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me again.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. You can send us an email to talk@steinershow.org. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on this? I mean, I think, you know, Kalima, that this is a, I said before we went in the air that, and I'll just throw this out here and we can start this way maybe, that men whose sexuality leans towards heterosexuality and women more than anything else, always talk about women. Watch a woman when they walk past. Mm-hmm. Think about it. Get sexually aroused. Those things are real. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they're not. I mean, they just exist. And I think they're part of our human capacity and who we are as human beings. Mm-hmm. But there's something about the way that society, culture, patriarchy has perverted it to, I can take what I want. I can dominate. I can grab what I want. I can touch what I want. I can talk about it that way if I want it that way if I want. I mean, I said it's really. I'm so glad Donald Trump did this. I am, because I think that it's brought something to the fore that needs to be brought to the fore.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Brought to the fore for whom, though?
For everybody to look in the mirror, for humanity to look in the mirror in America, and deal with what he has wrought and what he has given to us.
Okay. You know, I definitely am happy that the conversation around misogyny and rape culture is elevated at this current time. Seriously, like, that's really important.
You said a much nicer way than I did. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. That's all right. But there have been people in the world who have been trying to elevate this conversation for a very long time, an awful lot of activism, theorizing, platform building, campaigning to bring these questions up to the forefront. I think that you are spot on in that because of patriarchy, because of these frameworks, we have turned sort of sexuality and being full, free, sexual human beings who are attracted to one another into conversations of dominance. There's a way that we have linked the idea of sexuality and dominance to create hierarchies of power. And everything is based off of this. And there's no question that the only way this conversation would be at this fever pitch is if a white heterosexual man with a lot of money were finally there for us to sort of see it and pick it apart and talk about it. However, you know, I don't want to obscure the fact that people have been working on this for really long times, and women have been trying to protect their pee for a very, very long time.
Right, but I hear you. But, yeah. but oftentimes it takes. People knew that segregation was wrong. Let's just go back 60 years, ooh, okay. Right? But it took Birmingham, Alabama, and a picture on television to make people go, oh, no, when we knew it was happening all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying when I say,
oh, yeah.
When somebody like Trump puts it out there, it causes the masses of people to go, okay, we have to pay attention.
Right. I think that, and while I completely agree with that, like I totally agree with that, I think that when we create these sort of linear narratives, it erases the fact that there's been a lot of fire and work that's been stoking to get us to that point.
Right.
And that's all I'm countering with
agree.
Yeah, that we are poised. We are poised to have this conversation because folks have been doing a lot of work around it and trying to elevate the conversation for a very long time.
If I could just like to build on that, maybe turn it a little. So like my eye opening moment was similar to like political comments when Todd Akin made his comments in 2012 that
remind us of that.
He had said something along the lines of women can't get pregnant from rape because their body has a way of shutting it down.
Right. Just wanted to get it out there.
That was kind of my moment. And for me, the way I look at it, in kind of from my faith tradition is you're always looking for new life that comes out of what has died. So like thinking about what you said, Mark, like for me, like I'm certainly, you know, I feel awful for the women who have been the objects of Trump's behavior. I don't think it's a good thing that like the things that he's done that led him to make those comments, to feel comfortable, make those comments. But out of like that awful stuff, what new life could come out of this? So not like being like, you know, man, I'm glad this happened in order that people may learn, but that, well, like, you know, in my example, Todd Akin's political career crashed and burned and, you know, we're all better for it. But like out of that death, like at least I was able to learn and do something and like kind of get my mind right. So that's, I mean, for me, that's how I would look at it, is like not celebrating like what happen, but like more like, you know, using this awfulness as a teachable moment for people who need to learn.
Brittany Oliver?
Yeah. So I'll say that, you know, when I first heard the comments about it from Donald Trump, one reaction that I had was just, you know, and just reiterating what Kalima says, that there have been people, activists and advocates and survivors who have been working on these issues for a really, really long time. And, you know, I was not surprised by his comments at all. Mm-hmm. I was not shocked by them.
Right.
If anything, it showed, you know, you have folks like Brock Turner. It's all connected. Mm-hmm. You know, because his behavior is the reason why we have incidents like, or, you know, situations like Brock Turner. It just wasn't a surprise to me that he said the things that he said. And as far as athletes coming out now talking about, you know, I think I've seen a couple of articles circulating, say, of athletes saying that they don't you know, they don't have conversations like that. And, you know, it's, my question is, where were you? Where were you on when on issues of rape culture? Where mm-hmm. have you been? If that wasn't the case, I just think that he is. There's a much larger issue. There are more Donald Trump. There are more, a lot more men that speak and talk like him in spaces that are not obvious to the masses of folks.
I think that, and I agree with everything. I'm going to open the phones here because I'm going to get the phone started early. I think that I agree with everything everybody said here. I think that that sexual assault is prevalent. It always has been. It's been here. And it's much more prevalent than the studies or anybody show. I think the prevalence of and the power of sexual assault on women's lives and people's lives, our culture, was seen in that tweet response.
Right.
50 women a minute.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely.
On Twitter, telling these stories that are just, if you read, and I will read a couple of stories that came on this Twitter piece that were just heartbreaking and powerful. And the women in my family could have written these stories.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's, and you know it's large. I mean, I can't think of a woman in my family who's not experienced something like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think. Yeah.
And women I know, I can't probably think of a woman I know that can't tell this story.
Right.
And that's why we sort of couch this entire conversation in one of rape culture, because people have a specific narrative about what rape is all about. You know, they aren't understanding or paying attention to misogyny. They're not paying attention to sexual violence and sexually violent language. They're not paying attention to the other ways that it manifests, unwanted touching. Unless it's someone being pulled into an alley and raped by a stranger, they do not see it as sexual violence. So mm-hmm. the whole conversation of rape culture is about placing all of these things under the umbrella of situations that makes it make people, vulnerable people, unable to have bodily autonomy, right? And all of the things that go into preventing people from having bodily autonomy. And locker room banter is a part of that.
Yeah.
Just like pulling someone into an alley is a part of that. And I think this is the conversation that I'm happy to see expanding, as annoyingly treacherous as it is. And another thing, I'm in the locker room all the time, and our women's locker room, we don't have conversation like that. People talk about, I got to take my kid to school and look at my boobs. So, you know, I've got a thing. I've got a lump. What do you think it is? So
we have
different locker rooms as well.
But, I mean, I don't know. And I do one of the phones here, but I've spent a lot of time in locker rooms myself over the years.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I really don't recall a lot of men saying the kind of things Trump says. I recall a lot of men doing the things Trump says, mm-hmm. saying them in a bar, saying them at dinner,
mm-hmm. yeah.
saying them on the street. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but I think that's real. You know, mm-hmm. but I think this
mm-hmm.
the whole locker room banter thing is just makes me sick when he says that. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just
and like considering what Kalima said, like if you in terms of like that locker room banter and connecting it to rape culture, like if you diagram those recorded statements, like just like break them down, like they are like the playbook for how this language contributes to rape culture.
Right.
And you take first and foremost, him who is saying, you know, I'm a star, they let you get away with it, this and that. And then you take the person he's directing it to, I can just grab her, you know, and like he, you know, when you talk about the ideas of racial privilege and gender privilege, like, I mean, he probably wouldn't be able to enunciate them in a clear way, but in that sentence, he's showing a very clear understanding. I'm a rich white man, and mm-hmm. I can do this to a woman, and I will get away with it because I can. And mm-hmm. that is like the clearest breakdown of rape culture. I will get away with it because I can.
Brittany, go ahead. Then I'm going to go to the first two callers, Antonio and Andrea. We're going to get your calls right away here.
Sure. I was going to, just piggyback off of that. I was just going to say that it also brings, you know, reminds us of what happens in environments where there are men, white men, like Donald Trump in positions of power, and how this behavior, it's insidious. It just goes, unknown. And when I talk about having equal access to public spaces with the work that I do at Hollaback, this is connected to that. This is connected to being able to be in women and queer folks, being able to be in public space and not having their body commented on in over-sexualized ways and just dominance, just clear dominance of taking space away from them. This is directly connected, but it's a grim reminder of men that are in positions of higher positions of power and what they feel they are able to do because of how much money they have. It's also it's capitalism as well. Mm-hmm. That's ingrained into. It's all tied and all linked together.
Let me open the phones here. 410-319-8888. Do join us for your thoughts, and I want to hear your stories if you have them as well, because I think that people need to hear those things. You don't even have to say your name if you don't want to. 410-319-8888. Antonio, you're on the air. Welcome. You got him? Antonio, you there? All right, let's try Andreas. Andreas, you there?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks a lot. Thank you, Mark Steiner. I listen to him quite frequently. I just wanted to say this. I'm not surprised that with Trump at these tapes that have come out. I'm just curious as to why they come out now. I'm sure it's all a part of strategy and so on and so forth. As far as the issue of locker room talk, I can say, unfortunately, that in my past I have engaged in this sort of kind of banter in my youth when I didn't know any better, and also, you know, it comes down to sometimes the whole peer pressure and. Not knowing, for me specifically, not knowing how I should be reacting in these situations where this kind of conversation comes up, or having a low self-esteem even at the time when I was engaging in this conversation with certain folks. You know, it comes down to poor, you know, teaching, poor role modeling, and also media and all of this stuff, and people growing up in a world where they think certain things, they're allowed to think certain things are okay, and the certain kind of crowds that you hang out with and so on and so forth. And most importantly, you know, now that I've become closer to my creator, my God, who is Jesus, I realize that a lot of people just don't know how much value their life, how valuable their individual lives are. Mm-hmm. And so they have a hard time
I think we got
playing a role in the society, not knowing how they should act.
Andreas, I really appreciate the openness of what you said. And, you know, I think that I'll let everybody else answer here, but I think that just like if I was in a conversation with people and I heard someone use the N-word, I would say that's not something that's appropriate for you to do. I don't want to hear it. And maybe get in a conversation about why. And I think for men, the same thing when you hear somebody use the P-word or the C-word referring to women. Mm-hmm. I think that's I can think there's a men's gathering I went to often, somebody who I dearly loved, and it always happened. After a while, I kept saying, "Brother, look, I really just got to stop. I mean, because it just is. I don't want to hear it. It's degrading to the people around us in our lives. You just can't do it. And mm-hmm. Here's why. I mean, I think that's important for men to stand up and say, it's not acceptable.
Absolutely. And I think, too, from a male perspective, like whenever there is a high profile incident of sexism, of incidents that contribute to rape culture, there's always this wave of, I have daughters, I have a wife, I have female people, you know, who I'm close to. And I can't stand that, because it's, you know, one, it often comes off as talking about women as if they're in the possessive, like I'm supposed to protect them, which is wrong in its own right. But more so, I think it's really important. I like when something like this happens, I don't think about my wife or my mother. I think about my son. Like, I think about how is he going to grow up, and like, what are the impressions he's going to have, and what is the understanding he's going to have about gender and sexuality. So like, listening to this gentleman's story, it was very familiar to me as a kid. Like, I mean, my parents were great and they taught me a lot of great stuff, but like, I certainly did not know the intricacies of rape culture. So, you know, like, having positive male role models is one thing, but men, like, they have to stand up and educate. Like, they just do. It's so essential.
Yeah. And also, you know, this comment was made, what, 11 years ago. Trump was over 60 years old. He doesn't have youth to blame for this.
But he was 59 years old when he said 59.
59 years old. I'm sorry. You've been on, 59. You've been on this earth. All right.
59.
He's been on the planet long enough.
Right. Right.
You
right,
know,
right.
This, you know, this to be able to understand, or at least he has willingly not acknowledged, does willingly chooses not to understand how he participates in toxic masculinity and how he perpetuates a toxic masculinity. So I would never chalk this up to youthful folly, because there are people who are older than him who still make these kinds of comments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yep.
Right. And worse.
And worse. And do worse.
Before we go back to the phones, Brittany, do you want to jump in with anything before we hit the phones again?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, in terms of, you know, I mean, the fact that he's even running, he's even running for president. it's just, you know, has been able to use the language that he's been able to use over time. It's just, I think that is that hits me every time. It hits me every time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, which is the last thing you just said, I just give a visceral reaction. You know, I covered many elections over the last 20 years, 25 years almost in the air here. And even though I've had somebody I cared about in many of elections or the way I thought, I was always able to kind of listen to the other side and hear what they had to say. Mm-hmm. But can't.
I can't.
I hear
his voice and he feels abusive.
Yeah.
He feels violent. I can't even stand to be in a space where his voice is happening, because it feels like violence and it causes me to be triggered and I have to walk away.
Well, I just want to get into what we think this is unleashing both positively and negatively in our society and culture after this next call. Mm-hmm. And what we do about it is the real question. Yeah. From his hovering over Hillary during her when she was speaking.
Physical dominance.
What he says.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so let's go to the phones and get a couple calls, and I'm going to really wrestle with that right after the break. 410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air.
Morning, Mark Steiner.
Morning, Leo Burrows.
And good morning to you and all your guests. Let me say, there's enough hypocrisy to go around, isn't it? Donald Trump and Bill Clinton, poster boys, white male dominance, rape culture. It reminds me of the creating the light-skinned Negroes and the house Negro and the field Negro, raping black women. You know, all of this is intertwined with institutional racism. These are manifestations of institutional racism. When we talk about Donald Trump, who of course is a lowlife, but he's going to continue to be celebrated in the business world because they say he has business acumen. Whatever that means. That means exporting products to other companies, outsourcing our resources to other nations with disregard to the well-being of the working class in this country, the black and the poor, et cetera. So all I can say is thank God that the truth has come out in the open. Maybe there will be manifest changes as a result of the truth being laid bare for all to see. But again, white male dominance, right on, hypocrisy, institutional racism, one and the same.
Thanks so much, Leo. Always good to hear your voice and your thoughts. Let's get another caller in here. Then we'll take a short break, and then we'll come right back and Errol and Antonio. I say, Antonio, you're back. We'll get to you, but we're going to begin wrestling with, what does this teach us? What does it say to us, both positively and negatively, in the society? Where is it going to take us, do we think? Stay with us. Back, folks. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show as we continue our roundtable on what the words of Donald Trump have unleashed in the society. Not that it hasn't been here before, but what it has unleashed in the society and where it may take us. We're here with Kalima Young, instructor at Towson University, University of Maryland College Park, who has been a frequent guest on the show for many years. Pastor Jacob Simpson of the Salem Lutheran Church here in Baltimore. Brittany Oliver, who's a community activist and artist and a co-director of Hollaback Baltimore and works at the ACLU of Maryland. And you at 410-319-8888. But let me just, and so Antonio, we're going to come to your call and also to Errol. So hold on. We're going to come right to, your, to what you have to say. But I just want to go your initial thoughts on this, on the question of where do you think this takes us now? It's out there. This has become not just part of the campaign that may sink Donald Trump, but I think that beyond the presidential race, what does this unleash upon us in terms both of opportunity and addressing something huge in the society, but also to what forces does it unleash? I said in the break, I think that Trump's campaign has unleashed a racist, xenophobic force that really believes they can act with impunity. Mm-hmm. How does that carry over into this question of misogyny and sexual assault? And then you also see women on his campaign, not on his campaign, but who support Donald Trump, who are making excuses and saying, it's okay, this is what men do. We women have to understand that. This is how men talk. Yeah. This is what we do. Mm-hmm. This is what they do, mm-hmm. They say. So what do you think is the outgrowth of this? What will this take us?
I don't know. Gosh. It's a lot of fodder. It gives us it allows us to see the many different ways power works. Mm-hmm. If we harness it and take these opportunities to acknowledge how power works, how it's manifested, who's complicit, how people buy into their own oppressions, how those oppressions are then used to like further capitalism, how those oppressions are used to further dominance of particular folks. And I think that it at least gives us a very prime case study with which to start unpacking power. Now, how we unpack that power depends on where we're situated. Are we educators in a classroom? You can unpack it that way. Do you have children? Then you can have that conversation with them about toxic masculinity and all of the things. If we're looking at, if you are an activist, where do you have opportunities to intervene? We can all enter into this conversation from wherever we're situated, but at least we have a very large case study with which to start unpacking power. So that's my first initial thought as an answer to that.
Brittany?
I think that, there are a lot of advocates and a lot of folks who are just working on this issue, especially here in Baltimore. And my recommendation with all is to get involved. To get involved with the work that we're doing. We're here, and show up. You know, just show up for survivors and folks who are working on these issues, because we got a long way to go. And I think that Donald Trump is, he's a prime example of why this work continues. So I highly recommend just getting involved and showing up for those who are dealing with this, especially, you know, if you care about it.
Just a footnote, what Kalima and Brittany are saying. I will be, for many reasons, I'll be happy when the election is over, but I'll be very happy when this election is over, and not just couched in the idea of, like, you know, how this is being used between the two candidates. This is so much bigger than these two people. Than these two parties. And sometimes in election seasons, there tend to be, like, topics that get brought up, that get part of a dialogue going, that just get dismissed then once the election's over. So my hope is that, like, in the same ways that Kalima and Brittany have described, that this just keeps going and people still have the energy to keep talking about this once Donald Trump is bounced, because it the problem is not going to go away the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November.
But I think I think we may be on the cusp of the phones here, that we may be on the cusp of a moment where we will probe and address this issue of misogyny and sexual assault in deeper ways than we ever have, in a larger sense. You know, and I say it again, acknowledging what you said, acknowledging the struggles that have gone on for a long time.
Right.
That people have not stopped struggling with this and right. against this, and for something a different way of living and being.
Yeah, new language is going to come up, new theories and new ways of doing activism from this.
Right.
And that is a positive that we can pull from the conversation.
Just like, you know, white folks have to address racism in the white community, I think men have to address misogyny in every community.
Right. And we have to also unbuckle that from just being heterosexual men, because there's a lot of misogyny within the queer community as well.
Yeah, everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
And I can't say this enough of how folks that know me know that I talk all the time about how the intersections of racism and sexism and how much both of those issues intersect with one another, and how they impact me. They affect me and a lot of other people. So I think that's just it's another reminder that these both of those are struggles for me personally, and they don't ever they come in different forms. They're depending on where it's coming from and how, but the impact of it is still there. There's a high impact with it.
Let's return to the phones. I'm 410-319-8888. We're going to go to Brenda, and then we're going to go to Antonio, and then we'll try to get as well to Randy and Eric. 410-319-8888. Brenda, you're on the air.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
You know, I think it's very interesting. We're talking about, Trump as if what he's done or what he's saying is new. You know, I mean, this man has been this way for years. Yeah, this is coming out in the news now of, what he said in this video of how he looks at women or treats women. But, I can't believe that we think that this is something, brand new. The people in his circle, this man is a multi-billionaire. These people know him. They know how he is. And a lot of them, as I've heard someone say before, he will, continue to be celebrated, as time goes on, in the business community. And they're going to continue to allow him to be who he is. Mm-hmm. The thing about Trump is that he's an in-your-face racist. You know what you're dealing with. What scares me is what's going to happen next. No, he's not going to get in the White House, and he's probably not going to concede that he is not going to win, the election. However, what is the Republican Party going to do next? What's going to happen behind the scenes, where we're going to be reacting to what they come up with? For Clinton, I feel like, it's the lesser of two evils,
Right.
I mean, if we think TPP is not going to go through, I mean, I think we got another thing coming there. You got all these major, Fortune 500 companies that are backing Clinton, and that's not for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
We got, I believe we're going to see more prisons. We already know that that's happening. Mass incarcerations of black and brown people, and Obamacare is a disaster.
Right.
Really is. So I appreciate you taking the time to listen to me, and I love your show. Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda. Mm-hmm. Let's get another call and come back. 410-319-8888. Antonio, you're on the air.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple of comments. I'm a neuroscientist, and so I'd like to make a couple of comments from a scientific perspective. First of all, anthropologically, I would say that the real reason that this seems sensational at this particular time is given the high profile of Donald Trump. Of course, it's been going on for a long time because it's deeply embedded in the culture of this country, not just in this country, but deeply embedded in global countries, given how things were. Two decades ago, it was really not as much a big deal for some of these things to be said or for some of these things to be done. What has happened is that the mores of the society have shifted in a way towards greater sensitivity towards these issues,
So now it appears like it's a more prominent issue. 30 years ago, people would do things like this, and it was not really thought of as a bad deal. In fact, some people didn't really object to that being done. So the mores have changed, the sensitivities have changed. The conditioning of the people involved in this is very deeply embedded. So this is not likely to change. What's good, I agree with you, Mark, that what's good about this is that it brings it up into the light so that we can talk about it and we can flush it out. And I think what will happen as a result of this is that men, let me just expand the conversation. It's not just men who happen to be spouting these things. I can remember being in places where women squeeze my buns in certain situations like that. So it's not just that way. As one of your guests said, it happens in all communities and across gender lines specifically. So it happens. It's a broader conversation than that. But this is not going to go away. What I think will happen as a result of this conversation and input like what you're having now is that people will become more sensitive to saying these things and doing these things. And that's the value of the whole exposure, is that people get to think about it and talk about it. Mostly, human beings are conditioned by subconscious behavior that they don't really even realize is being triggered. This comes from childhood input, and then later on as adults, people learn to undo these behaviors. But mostly, these are the result of having grown up around people who do these and say these things, and before you know it, you have inculcated those things, and as you grow up, you tend to do the same thing. The last thing I would say is that when it comes to having conversations with men specifically about altering these kinds of behaviors, it's a very difficult thing for men because the peer pressure to be masculine, hyper-masculine in some cases, outweighs the value of men being more conscious about how it is that they should address these issues. So I think having it in the forefront, continuing to talk about it, is the best way to be able to have men and women be able to step back for a minute and evaluate what it is that their comments or their actions do to other people, and then reevaluate.
That's what I appreciate. Kalima.
Yeah, I respect the particular standpoint of our caller. The one thing that I want to talk about, sort of tease out, is this conversation of translating cultural sensitivity, which is a phrase that I just... but cultural sensitivity to an actual conversation of cultural competence, right? That there is a moment, right? So if we want to use our caller's idea of like now people are more culturally sensitive than they were 30 years ago. And I'm just going to say that was the result of a lot of work, activism, scholarship, and theorizing, right? This didn't just come out of the ether. Things change because people do the work. But that we're at this point now that we take this idea, this cultural sensitivity, and how do we actually translate that into cultural competence around these issues of power, misogyny, patriotism, capitalism, all of the things that feed into rape culture. And that's where the difficulty, that's where the stickiness lies, you know?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, please go ahead. I'll wait.
Well, and just connecting to that, considering what he said at the end about peer pressure, like that pressure comes from like all of those things that Kalima just mentioned, like this impossible standard men feel they have to hold themselves to, like decades, really millennia of patriarchy. I mean, just from my perspective, like certainly peer pressure is a problem, but it's also like, you know, I know Kalima and I know Brittany personally, they could care less about my peer pressure. You know, their lives, their well-being is at stake. So like, they're, like as Kalima talked about, like with those cultural things, like there has to be, like at least from a male perspective, like some way to self-examine, like what am I doing wrong, and how can I do this better, and like how can I cast this peer pressure aside to where the point where you could just say this is just silly toxic masculinity playing itself out.
And how can we uncouple that from the very real power people have from wielding toxic masculinity?
Yeah.
How do
yeah.
you uncouple it from? And because of this prowess, you get to be the head of the board of this organization because of your toxic masculinity.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Go ahead, yeah. Brittany, then we'll reopen the phones.
Sure. Yeah, I think that one of the, you know, it's important to name it. I think it's important to name what's happening. And also, you can you can believe survivors too. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, people who are coming out about these, about, who talk about rape culture and how it affects them. You can choose to listen, and you can choose to do something about it if it's something that you care about. But there's a stigma around it. You know, it again, what I explained earlier about the intersections of racism and sexism, they both go hand in hand for me because, you know, if it has something to do with race, if my first question or my first reaction to it is not give me the details. Let me interrogate you about the situation because I don't believe you. And you know, so I think that it's going to take a lot of ownership, owning and naming what is happening. And if the culture is the culture around what's happening is toxic, and especially if it's it's predominantly male, there's an issue. There's an issue, and I'm glad, you know, I was very glad to know that Jacob was going to be on this call, for example, because we need more men to take a stand and join us. And it's unfortunate that it took Donald Trump to do that for some people.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I think Donald Trump's saying what he said on that bus 11 years ago that was caught on tape. I think that I'm not so sure it forced people to start talking about it who didn't. Mm-hmm. I think it's forcing a conversation that is to make it a very public conversation that hasn't happened before,
right?
Because of who he is, right. What he's running for,
right.
What he stands for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
we have to. It gives us the opportunity to start thinking about the ways that we need to stop rewarding oppressive behaviors. Yeah. Like, we are rewarding oppressive behaviors by making people CEOs, by making people football stars, making people celebrities, making people lots of money. Yep. And at least this provides us the opportunity to figure out how we can stop rewarding oppressive behaviors.
Yeah.
Right? That's one of the ways you start unpacking it.
Yep. What do our listeners think? At 410-319-8888, try to get you in the order you called in. Eric, you're on the air. Welcome.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
You know what? Here's the first thing, and I'm going to try to be as brief as I can with this.
Good.
The first problem I have with the media is that I listen to different folks, especially the progressives, so-called. The one four-letter word you refuse to use with Donald Trump is liar. You know, everybody uses all these cliches, three, four-letter. The word liar is rarely ever used.
That's not quite true. Which you use all the time, but anyway.
I don't hear it as much
do.
As I think I should. You're in the media, so you're going to hear more than I will. And my access to the media is limited, unfortunately. And I'll concede your point. My second point is, you know, everybody's wondering where all this comes from. The society has been setting us up for Donald Trump for a while. Mm-hmm. Okay, from the political establishment, which lends itself to the Tea Party, now you got Donald Trump. Okay, all the way to your cultural setups, whether it's Duck Dynasty, Jersey Shore, Desperate Housewives, Honey Boo Boo, and what a Survivor, whatever. We have been playing in the mud for years.
Okay,
if it came out tomorrow that Donald Trump was having an incestuous relationship with one or more of his daughters, his supporters would still stand by him.
Okay, but what I'm trying to do here today is not kind of focus on Trump's campaign so much as what Trump's overt misogyny has done to the public dialogue. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because we talk about this aspect of Trump all the time in this campaign, and I'm as disgusted politically with this as anybody, with the entire campaign, actually. But, I mean, I think that's what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I think maybe just to take a piece from that, and considering what Kalima had said about rewarding bad behavior, I mean, like, once again, we were talking about this earlier before we came in, it's not like any of these accusations, anything is new. Like, he's been accused of doing horrible stuff for decades. I think, you know, was it Marla Maples who accused him of rape? I'm not sure. I thought one of his ex-wives did, or
maybe it was Ivanka.
And even when she did that, he still had The Apprentice. Like, he still had like this big hit network television show. You know, Roman Polanski and Woody Allen are still making movies. So you know, it like just to consider what that gentleman is saying, like. Apart from, I mean, like, Trump is, this is one more reward, is now he's a major party nominee. And yeah, I agree. Like, I mean, I guess it's in some sense, I can't imagine Trump ever having another network show. I would like to think networks aren't that stupid. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, like, just that could be a good beginning, is just like to stop rewarding that bad behavior.
Let me go hit the phones again and come right back to our guests. It's 410-319-8888. Mike, you're on the air. Hi, Mike, you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was watching the CBS Morning Show today with Charlie Rose, Gayle King, and Noel O'Donnell.
Uh-huh.
And they had a Jody Cantor on there from New York Times. And she wrote a piece about Trump's remarks. And she summed it up as saying it really became so horrific now because he was mainly talking about white women. And she also stated that Islamic and Latino women don't have the power, you know, to combat things like this. But now that white women have become a dominating voting force today, that's why this has become so big now. That's my comment.
Let me rest with that for a minute. I understand that. Let me just throw this out and see what our guests think here. Is that I understand always the intersection of race and sexuality in our country and the complexity there and all the rest. That's real. It's that you can't get away from that.
Mm-hmm.
But I see this maybe naively though, that in a broader sense, this is about wrestling with misogyny across the board and what it means in every culture among all of us. I mean,
yes.
You know, I don't know that these women that Donald Trump has assaulted were all white.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they were. Maybe they weren't.
Mm.
I have no idea.
Right. This is misogyny and rape culture doesn't just belong to white folks. Hello. We would not have had all that conversation that happened a couple of weeks ago about Nate Parker and Birth of a Nation, had we.
Yes.
We wouldn't have an issue every time we talk about Bill Cosby. We want, like, rape culture and misogyny, this is a conversation that all cultures, the culture is based off of it. It manifests differently depending on where you're situated. But this is a conversation that everyone should and is having and is impacted by. And sometimes it manifests differently depending on cultural mores and race and religion and value systems, but it's still the conversation.
I mean, I just throw this in. I am not a fan of imperialism or capitalism, as most people who know me know.
Yeah.
But I will say that, I mean, Brittany, we can go, you know, that the rise of women in India against the patriarchy in India and the rape culture in India didn't come there because of British colonialism.
Right.
It preceded British colonialism. Mm-hmm. It may have been in some ways enhanced by it, but it preceded it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and many cultures on this planet see women as property, just as they do their home and their cattle and their children.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I mean, this is, it's deep in the human psyche.
Right.
We're not unearthing something here that says, you know, this happened in the last 400 years.
Right.
I'm sorry, wait, Brittany?
Yeah, I mean, just to piggyback off of what Kalina just said, I mean, it's rape culture and misogyny. It's not, you know, it just don't belong to white folks. And I think that is the point that I make when I'm talking about the intersections of how sexism and racism attacks me in both ways. And, you know, there are similarities and differences. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's important for everyone to have this conversation. I think that rape culture impacts people differently based off of where you grew up, you know, your socioeconomic status. I mean, there are just a lot of things that go into it. And also, rape culture looks different in America
than it does in other countries.
Mm-hmm. And responses to it as well.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, let's talk about the response. Go ahead.
No, I didn't have anything.
Let's talk about where the response might be. I mean, I think that we've seen the rise in America of Black Lives Matter. We've seen the rise of America being forced to deal and address racism in a broader sense than it ever has before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're on the cusp of dealing with the same thing when it comes to misogyny. Mm-hmm. I've been saying this for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you like Hillary Clinton's campaign or not, right?
Right.
But it's emblematic of something larger,
mm-hmm.
philosophically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Donald Trump's being the misogynist candidate, being the one attacking her, I think these are all things that are about to explode a conversation in our country and a movement that becomes larger and will become writ larger than it has been, right. That needs to happen.
Right.
That's what I think is going to happen.
I think it's already happening.
Right.
You know, I think it's already happening that a person who probably 2 years ago would not have been able to recognize that Donald Trump's stalking around her at the town hall was indicative of him being like using his dominance as a man, you know, to try to intimidate her. The fact that like the average citizen who's not hanging out reading about this stuff all the time can say, I call out that behavior as that was some stalky, yucky, offensive behavior. I think that means we're moving some things forward, right?
I agree. And my big concern too, like I think throughout at least American history, whenever there has been progress, there has been an equal and opposite painful reaction.
Oh,
to that.
Yes.
You know, the end of slavery, the rise of the Ku Klux Klan, you know, right. Desegregation brings the White Citizens Council. Black Lives Matter brings All Lives Matter and basically Donald Trump and birtherism and everything else. And but this is not, you know, even when people have fought against the patriarchy and the American past, you know, like in the 60s and 70s with the rise of the women's lib movement. Like, that gave way to the Republican Party coddling the evangelicals. We had the rise of the religious right, and seems like they're in their death grasp, but, I mean, like, almost 40 years of dominance.
I wouldn't
in American
count them
politics.
Out yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't either.
That's like I don't know about Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's historical that, like, we're seeing that rise, and that's we're seeing, you know, people push back again, and that's a good thing. But, like, as Kalima and Brittany have said, like, historically, that has always happened. Like, my big fear is, like, how is the reaction going to be? And in part, his candidacy is the reaction.
Right.
So I will have to close with Merrick Moses, which writes in a tweet. Merrick writes in, Donald's situation is also an indictment of patriarchy and abuse within the church. Mm. That's a conversation.
Ooh.
That Merrick. We could have. Thank you, Merrick.
Right at the end. You had to do that.
I know nothing about that whatsoever.
Of course you wouldn't, Pastor.
Next conversation. Rape culture.
And with that, I want to thank Pastor Jacob Simpson for being here, pastor of the Salem Lutheran Church here in Baltimore. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Brittany Oliver, community activist, artist, and co-director of Hollaback, Baltimore, and works at ACLU of Maryland. Always good to have you with us, Brittany.
Thank you.
And my dear friend, Kalima Young, good to have you in the studio once again. Instructor at Towson University, University of Maryland College Park, as well as producing this rape culture series with us here on the Mark Steiner Show. And good luck on your thesis defense.
Oh, thank you. It's always a pleasure. Thanks for the love.
We are going to go to a conversation about what's happening in Rosebud with Native activists. So stay with us for that. On the way there, I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com. We'll be right back.